Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 477 for May 3rd, 2014. Coming up in a few minutes.
It's a deliberately a pun. It's a new riff in my life, as well as a new take on an old tradition as far as the bourbon goes.
This coming week will be a big one for Ken Lewis. After years of running one of the biggest liquor stores in the Cincinnati area, he's turning from selling whiskey to making it at his New Riff Distillery just across the river from Cincinnati in Newport, Kentucky. More with Ken Lewis later on Whiskey Cast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, this week's Your Voice, and in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, my tasting notes for a brand new single malt we just heard about last week. All on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey.
Let's get started with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. As expected, Suntory completed its $16 billion acquisition of Beam this week. Last time around, I mentioned a Japan news report that Suntory plans to integrate all of its existing spirits portfolio into Beam and run the business out of Beam's headquarters in the Chicago area. Well, that's exactly what will happen. Beam Suntory will be run by former Beam CEO Matt Shattuck and will take on oversight for all of Suntory's brands and production by the end of the year. That includes Morrison Bowmore Distillers in Scotland, which has been owned by Suntory for the last 30 years. Beam's Clarkson Hine told me this week that the integration process will be handled slowly. Specifics are still being worked out. Look for Beam Suntory to merge Beam's Scotland operations at Lefroy Gannard Moor with Morrison Bowmore at some point, though. Also on the business front, Edrington has officially opened its new North American Distribution, Sales, and Marketing Unit. Edrington Americas has taken on responsibility for the company's entire Scotch whiskey portfolio in the U.S., including the Macallan, Highland Park, the famous Grouse, and Cutty Sark. Sales doubled over the last 3 years when Remy Cointreau USA was Edrington's U.S. importer. CEO Paul Ross hopes to double them again over the next 5 years.
We needed to get closer to the customer and the consumer, and ultimately we could never have done that with Remy. That wasn't their problem. That's just the reality of where our business had got to. So I know we're approaching $200 million of turnover. We want to get closer to the consumer, closer to the customer. We know we have to, you know, innovate. And to get growth on all our brands, we needed to be closer to, you know, understanding what exactly people are wanting on trends and trends out there, closer to the marketing you know, programs. So it's a natural evolution. It's very exciting, and you know, we're looking very forward to the challenges.
Edrington Americas will have offices in New York, Miami, Dallas, Southern California, and Chicago, with that office working closely on Canadian sales with Beam Suntory, which will continue to distribute the Edrington portfolio in Canada. You can listen to my entire interview with Paul Ross at whiskeycast.com. On the political front, Scotland's highest court has decided to send the Scotch Whiskey Association's lawsuit challenging minimum pricing to the European Court of Justice in Luxembourg. The Scottish government is hoping to fight the country's alcohol abuse epidemic by imposing minimum prices for whiskey and other alcoholic beverages. The SWA claims that would violate European Union laws and hurt Scotch whiskey exports, and that it would be ineffective in solving the problem. That said, Scottish First Minister Alex Salmond is now facing a lot of criticism for his stand on the issue in a GQ magazine interview published this week in the UK, in which he referred to Scotland as, quote, a nation of drunks, and suggested that Scotland suffers from a lack of confidence as a country. The eyes of the world are on Louisville this Kentucky Derby weekend, but local leaders are hoping to attract more attention to the city's bourbon heritage in coming years. A new report out this week from Mayor Greg Fisher's Bourbon and Food Working Group of Industry Leaders recommends a number of ways to attract more bourbon lovers to the Louisville area. The city is already benefiting from new downtown attractions, such as the Evan Williams Bourbon Experience, But Stacy Yates of the Louisville Convention and Visitors Bureau told me there's much more to be done.
Louisville was once the center of the whiskey universe, if you will, prior to Prohibition. And the amazing development that we've seen over the past decade with the premiumization of the product and the things that the bourbon industry has continued to do and the global demand being what it is, combined with the more recent tourism effort to tell people that this is indeed the home place of Kentucky bourbon, where 95% of the world's bourbon supply is made, but also that there is a tourism experience that complements that. So it's sort of been the perfect storm over the last several years. And again, this is just another nod by a city government that they want to support this initiative too.
Louisville will host the inaugural Kentucky Bourbon Affair in a couple of weeks. One of the proposals is to expand that into a full-fledged food and bourbon festival. There are also suggestions for a downtown bourbon education center and an increased bourbon presence at Louisville's airport. The entire interview with Stacy Yates is available in the news section at whiskeycast.com. New whiskeys out this week. The Glenlivet has a new single cask bottling that will be available exclusively at Heinemann Duty Free in Frankfurt's airport. It's a 16-year-old sherry butt bottled at 60.1% ABV. It's selling for €249, about $350 a bottle. At the other end of the spectrum, Ian McLeod Distillers is out with a new budget-priced blended scotch. The Fat Trout is a no-age statement blend that will sell for about $25 a bottle. And Heaven Hill's Bernheim Wheat Whiskey is not new. In fact, Parker Beam told us about it on the very first episode of WhiskeyCast back in 2005. But there's been a big change. The change is not in the whiskey, though, but on the bottle. Bernheim has never carried an age statement until now. Heaven Hill has added a 7-year-old age statement to Bernheim's labeling. You'll see the new bottles gradually at retailers. And finally, the Spirit of Speyside Festival is in full swing this weekend, and the festival is honoring 3 whiskey ambassadors. Not the folks you see behind the tables at festivals and tastings, but 3 regular folks. Penny Ellis was named Ambassador of the Year. She and her husband have owned the Nakomi Hotel in Forest for the last 20 years, and she's stepping down from the festival's board after this year's event. Frank and Jackie Scott of New Brunswick, Canada, were honored as international ambassadors. Jackie is a native of Scotland, and they founded the New Brunswick Spirits Festival a few years ago. Frank also runs the Lunar Rogue Whiskey Bar in Fredericton, New Brunswick. I'll have the results of this year's Spirit of Speyside Festival Whiskey Awards next time around. In the meantime, you can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, introducing Glenmorangie Companta, the 5th release in the Glenmorangie Private Edition range. A complex maturation in both Burgundy and Côte de Rhône French red wine barriques. Find out more at glenmorangie.com.
You've heard me mention a couple of times now that you can listen to complete interviews at the WhiskeyCast website, and I wanted to take a second to explain why. When we did our recent community survey, one of the comments we saw most often from you was that you wanted episodes of between 30 and 40 minutes long that fit into the average commute. Well, if there's a lot going on during the week and we have a lot of interviews, it's hard to cram everything in, so that's why I'm posting more complete interviews at the website now, and it also adds more context to the news stories at the website, too. On another note, don't forget about free shipping on all orders from the WhiskeyCast Photo Gallery between now and Father's Day on June 15th. If you're looking for a unique gift, there are both whiskey and non-whiskey prints available. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker. Jeffrey Murphy had this comment on last week's interview with Sam Simmons of the Balvenie on the debut album from his band, Copper Dogs. Any chance of a few copies of the Copper Dogs album getting to the U.S.? The fact that it's a live recording from fellow industry family on the malting floor of Balvenie equals instant got-to-have classic. Well, I haven't heard yet what the official plans are for selling the 500 copies of the Balvenie Malting's sessions. I've asked Sam for more details, and I'll share them with you when I get them. A couple of weeks ago, Charlotte Observer food editor Kathleen Purvis told us about her new book, Bourbon, on cooking with whiskey. Ken Goldenberg sent along this comment from Southern California. Mark, I really enjoyed your interview with Kathleen Purvis. I immediately downloaded her book on bourbon. I love cooking Southern food and enjoy my bourbon, so it's a perfect match. Glad you enjoyed it, Ken. I'll try to do some more segments on cooking with whiskey in the future. And if you have something you'd like to share, whether it's a question or a suggestion on something that you'd like to hear more about on a future episode, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at whiskeycast.com. Or you can just email me directly. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And this week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker on the web at johnnywalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you as always by Laphroaig. First off, Laphroaig Distillery Manager John Campbell had a birthday on Thursday. Happy birthday, John. Of course, the Islay Festival of Malt and Music is coming up at the end of the month, May 23rd through the 31st. Whiskey Live Canberra is coming up May 30th and 31st in Australia's capital city. The Filson Historical Society in Louisville kicks off a summer series of bourbon dinners at Porcini on June 3rd. Royal Mile Whiskies has announced the dates for this year's Whiskey Fringe in Edinburgh. It'll be August 8th through the 10th. Tickets go on sale June 11th. And the Whiskey Jubilee, emphasizing the Jew in Jubilee, moves from the fall to June this year. It'll be on June 17th in New York City. Those are just some of the 266 events on the calendar right now at whiskeycast.com. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Billy Lighton, master blender, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
The sherry butts in particular have a big impact on the flavour of Redbreast. It gives it the deep, dried, fruity notes, which is probably the signature of Redbreast. Take a sip, hold it in my mouth for minutes, and just dissect it and pick up all the little fruity notes. There's something that I didn't notice before. Whenever you leave your glass of Redbreast sitting there for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you can go back to it and say, well, something's changed there. Why is that changing? How is it changing? Is this something that I should be picking up on, you know? It's fascinating. And, I mean, I've been in the business 34 years and it still excites me, you know, things like this.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
These days, there isn't a month that goes by without someone opening up a new distillery, and I probably could feature a new distillery most weeks here on WhiskeyCast. So what makes the New Riff Distillery in Newport, Kentucky, different? Like many new distilleries, it's the second act in the founder's long career, but unlike most of the others, Ken Lewis has been in the whiskey business for years. He was just selling the stuff instead of making it. Ken owned the Party Source in Newport, one of the biggest liquor stores in northern Kentucky, but this coming week, his distillery will start producing its own spirit. We talked on Friday about his reasons for making the switch.
There certainly are a lot of reasons, but I was in the retail portion of the distilled spirits business and wine business and so forth for 38 years, so part of it is just enjoying a second business opportunity and changing to a different part of the industry. It's a deliberately a pun. It's a new riff in my life, as well as a new take on an old tradition as far as the bourbon goes. And then also it's a perception, or my perception 5 years or so ago, that the brown goods and bourbon in particular were on an upswing even then, and that there was a phenomenal opportunity to be had being in Kentucky, because I think we have the best location in the United States for a craft distillery, because we're in Kentucky, but we're also part of the greater Cincinnati 2.5 million metro area. So I just felt, man, I'm sitting in a phenomenal location. Why not, you know, extend my life and my business life and do something entrepreneurial and new, but still kind of allied to the industry that I knew.
And for those who are not familiar with the Newport area, you're literally right across the Ohio River from downtown Cincinnati, right?
Exactly.
And because of that, you've actually got some advantages that a lot of craft distillers don't have, in that you've got this built-in audience that is already interested being in Kentucky, the advantages of being close to a major market, and you actually built an events center as part of the distillery complex too, right?
Yes. And just to finish the thought, we are literally in front of 1 minute walk from the largest beverage alcohol store in the United States, which is the Party Source. So there's phenomenal synergies going on. The Party Source has a bourbon bar inside it, and to the best of their ability, given the scarcity, one of the largest collections of bourbon at retail sales. So wonderful synergies for us. Yes, we do have an event center on top of and as part of the distillery, which is something that I really don't think anyone else has done. And that's just a great opportunity for people to come to events, whether it's something that we're putting on or they're renting our spaces, and feel identified with and close to our distillery.
Now, how close are you to the Cincinnati airport?
We are approximately, the Cincinnati airport, of course, is in Kentucky, and we are literally about, depending on traffic, we are 20 to 30 minutes away.
Okay, so if people are flying in, they've got a 4 or 5 hour layover, they could still come over and do a quick tour then, theoretically, right?
They could do the tour, and then the neat thing is they could finish the tour by walking into the Party Source, going to the bourbon bar, there's a microbrewery inside the Party Source now, browsing the bourbon collection. It would be indeed a nice stopover.
Let's clarify just the relationship now, because you were the owner of the Party Source for a long time. And as I recall, when the original announcements were made about the distillery, your daughter was actually going to run the distillery at first, and then you've taken over. I assume there were some changes along the way that prompted that, or can you explain how this is working?
Oh, yeah. That's just a family in process. It's that really that simple. In Kentucky, and I think probably most everywhere because of the three-tier system, I can't be a retailer and a distiller. So the original plan was that my daughter would, who's in international wine sales, would come back to Kentucky and take on the distillery project. And along the way, she decided she wasn't ready for that opportunity, and frankly, she didn't feel that she had earned it, and wanted to pay some more dues in the industry. So I made the decision after a few months of very careful thought that, hey, I would sell the Party Source to my own employees. It's a employee stock ownership plan. So my employees now own the Party Source, and that freed me up to get licensed as a distiller. And I'm pretty pumped about the whole way things have worked out.
So it works out for everybody. The your former employees keep their jobs. They get a stake in the place now as equity owners, and you get to go on and try to make whiskey now, right?
And and have a second career in the industry.
Of course, every new distillery has that 3 to 4 year period of startup time. I understand that you're going downriver a little bit to get at least your initial stockpiles of bourbon, right?
Well, we will not do what so many are doing, which is release product that has been distilled elsewhere and aged elsewhere and release it under our name as if we distilled and aged it. We will not do that. We're going to sell some product that was distilled and aged elsewhere, but we'll be very transparent and very careful that it'll be a completely separate brand, and we'll absolutely identify and be proud of where it was distilled.
And what you're calling it, I believe, OKI or OKI, or what are you going to call it?
OKI, it's a completely separate brand, right.
I wasn't sure if you were using initials or you're spelling it out phonetically.
Yeah, it's initials. It's O period, K period, I period. Of course, it stands for Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana. It's a term that's fairly well known around this regional area.
Are you having fun yet with this? I know that this has got to be a nerve-wracking time because you're going to start production here in a few days, right?
Sure. Yes, it is. It is any startup, especially one with this many zeros in the price tag, is nerve-wracking. There's lots of issues and problems, and of course we have a major industrial process that we're fine-tuning and shaking out. And compounding that is my business plan, which of course started 3-4 years ago, has been dramatically affected by the barrel shortage. So that certainly adds another element to things. But even despite all that, it is exciting, and I am enjoying it. And, you know, you have to be patient to be a distiller, and we're going to get through all these bumps in the road. And I'm real pumped about being part of this part of the industry and doing something different in my life, a new riff, as I say.
And the other thing that I think you deserve credit for doing, as opposed to a lot of guys who get into the business, build a distillery, and go to a couple of courses and decide to call themselves a master distiller, is that you actually went out and hired a real master distiller.
We did, and Larry Ebersole, I think you must be familiar with his background, and he is one of our greatest living distillers right now. And Larry's been part of the process from the very beginning, so we're going back 3+ years. And what he's doing is not only helping us get up and running, but he'll be training the actual day-to-day distilling crew here. And he's already started, of course. That's well underway. So he's passing on, his mass, just a portion of that massive knowledge that he's earned, he's gained over 30 years, to another generation. So it's kind of a nice twist on things.
And for those who aren't familiar with his background, he was down in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, at what we now know as MGPI, but which was the Seagram's Distillery for many years, where guys like Jim Rutledge and Chris Morris and those guys all cut their teeth at one point during their careers, and eventually became LDI and now MGPI, and now Larry's working with you guys.
Yeah, Larry is a consultant, and he's, I think, taken on another client or two subsequent to us, so I think he's found a new riff on his life, and he's going to be passing on a lot of that knowledge he got at Seagram's and Pernod Ricard and LDI to another generation. So it's pretty neat stuff.
When do you hope to have your bourbon ready? I know you were thinking maybe, 4 years initially?
Yeah, the bourbon will tell us when it's ready. We're not trying to be cute. We want to honor that. We think that's, you know, certainly not before 4 years, but literally we want to be proud of that, the very first bottles we put out. So that's just our guesstimate. We'll see what the whiskey says.
What's your plan for that very first cask you're going to fill?
What's our plan in terms of...
You're going to hang on to that one, keep it as a keepsake?
Yeah, we'll hold back X amount, probably for charitable purposes, as well as, you know, saw a few barrels out of the first batch, just, you know, to age them longer. One of the things we certainly intend to do is our business plan, which at the moment's a little bit blown out of the water by the barrel shortage, but eventually it'll come around to it, is we intend to hold back a third of our production for further aging. So because in the long run, it's when it becomes 8 or 10 years that we'll be able to really establish our reputation.
I was just kind of figuring you might hang on to that first barrel and then do like Booker No used to do and just sort of save that one and pull some out of the barrel every now and then, just sit on the porch and sip it.
Well, and that's probably a darn good plan, or, you know, might even be better than putting it up for charity. Maybe barrel two will go to charity, and barrel one will be your thought for all of us.
Well, charity begins at home. Think of it that way.
I like that. And, you know, that's probably the right thing to do. So we'll hold on to that first one. Good idea.
If you're going to make whiskey, you might as well have fun doing it.
And if you wait that long, you've earned your right to get in a rocking chair or just sit on a porch on a pretty day and have a glass of bourbon, of your own bourbon from the first cask.
You'll find a link for the New Riff Distillery's website at whiskeycast.com. And that's this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with something unusual, a peated Amrut single malt from India. It's unusual because this is one of the few independent bottlings of Amrut, a single-cask Blackadder bottling that was distilled and matured in Bangalore, then sent to Scotland for additional maturation. It's bottled at 62.7% ABV, and the nose is intensely peaty with creosote and tar notes, along with hints of honey and vanilla underneath. The taste is smoky with intense peat, curry powder, black pepper, cinnamon, and cardamom spices, and touches of honey and vanilla that come out as the spices fade. The finish has a lingering smokiness with touches of dark chocolate, licorice, and an ashy mouthfeel. I'm scoring Blackadder's Amrut Peated Cask an 83. Next up, the Tullibardine 275 Sauterne finish. Tullibardine's range of finishes takes its names, or numbers, from the amount of whiskey the finishing casks usually hold, in this case, 275 liters. It's bottled at 43% ABV. The nose is dry, fruity, and sweet with pears, peaches, dried apples, hints of ginger and green grapes, and a touch of sandalwood. The taste is full, tart, and fruity with orange peel, grapefruit, cinnamon, banana, coconut, and touches of mango and ginger. The finish is long and fruity with good tropical flavors and a lingering punch of cinnamon. I'm scoring the Tullibardine 275 a 93. Finally, we heard last week about the Balvenie's new 15-year-old sherry cask single barrel that was released in the UK on Friday. I received a sample Friday just in time for this week's episode. It's bottled at 47.8% ABV, and the color is a deep bronze with just a touch of red. The nose is luscious and fruity with baked apples, plums, raisins, a touch of Christmas cake, and a hint of clove. The taste is thick and fruity with Christmas cake, plums, and a good buildup of clove and cinnamon spices that linger through the dry and spicy finish. I'm scoring the Balvenie 15-year-old sherry cask single barrel a 92. I'm adding these tasting notes to the searchable list of nearly 1,200 different whiskeys at whiskeycast.com. That's also where you'll find links for WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest news and events, and, of course, a complete archive of past episodes. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at WhiskeyCast. And my email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2014, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.